Now, once you've got the lead, it's really important to get as much upfront data as you can on the lead before it turns into a sales call, because...
Welcome back to Business Talk. Now, this was a TikTok-specific marketing podcast, but the social media landscape has changed. TikTok isn't the only short-form video powerhouse anymore for business owners. So I'm going to be pivoting this podcast to focus on all platforms that support short-form video content so that you can get an even bigger and better understanding of what is currently working on social media to grow your business. I'm your host, Austin Armstrong. And on this podcast, I interview real business owners and entrepreneurs from every industry that are leveraging short-form video to grow their business. You can connect with me across social media at SocialtyPro. Today's episode is sponsored by my company, Syllabi.io. Syllabi is a one-stop shop for video marketing on social media. From finding the topics your customers ask online to generating new video scripts, creating AI videos with real clones, and even direct publishing to your social media accounts, Syllabi has you covered. You can get started today with a 7-day free trial at Syllabi.io. Let's jump into today's episode. Today's guest is Josh Lyons with Lyons Closing. Josh helps high-ticket offer owners scale their sales teams to $1 million per month and beyond. Josh has had the honor of training Alex Hormozi's gym launch sales team, and within 8 weeks, they had their biggest sales month in over a year using his systems. I am so excited to talk to this guy today. Josh, thank you so much for joining me.
It is an honor. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, you bring so much to the table here that I think this podcast has really been missing. And I've had the privilege of learning from you over the last couple of weeks now. And I can attest that Josh is absolutely a sales genius and wizard. So I'm excited to learn from you and share all of your wisdom with this audience. But I'd love to learn more about you. I don't know that much about your past. What is your origin story? How'd you get into sales?
The hero's journey. My story, it's pretty crazy because it wasn't that long ago that I was bringing in $1,500 a month working a normal job, a job that by now artificial intelligence has already long gone and replaced, and you can get an AI to do the very basic marketing stuff that I was doing. And fast forward a few years later, and we'll get into some of the pivotal moments through that journey, I was bringing in $100,000 a month in commission. And I think really, if I were to say there was one thing within my story that's the highlight, is not necessarily what I did, but how quickly I was able to condense that sort of rocket ship up to the top. There's people that have made the same money as me in closing. It's probably people that have made more than me in closing, but they had decade-long careers. And as you've seen with your company, you don't have a decade to figure it out these days. You have 12 months before it's like, oh, that's outdated. That's the past. That's already been done and tested. And so my story was really getting in as a full-time closer, getting trained by a specific mentor in a very specific way, which is how I now mentor, and making a lot of money in commissions, bringing in millions of dollars a month for businesses, and then being headhunted by some of the best sales organizations and being asked, what are you doing differently? How have you been able to do this in 18 months? And we've been training guys for 5 years, and they're still trying to figure out some of these things that you've been able to figure out. And from there, I was brought into Jeremy Miner's team. I was brought into Matt Ryder's team. I was brought into Alex Hormozi's sales team to really download into them what were the key needle movers that were able to not only get me such great results, but able to do it in such an accelerated time. You mentioned before what I did at Hormozi's team. It was just 8 weeks. I came in, and within 8 weeks, I took them from being in a massive slump. They had closers that had been in ruts for weeks and months and just couldn't close what they should have been and bring deals to the table. And I was able to take them to their highest close rates in over a year. So I think really my story is more about the specifics of what I was able to find are the real key drivers to get sales reps and get closers and get businesses, high ticket offers or services, to exponentially increase their returns without it taking, you know, 400 hours of training over a year, because people just don't have that time, especially in the market that we're talking about. It needs to be done yesterday. And if it's not yesterday, it's, well, can you change the team in the next 4 weeks, in the next 6 weeks, in the next 8 weeks? And a lot of the sales training that's out there now, it can't do that. You know, it just is more generic. It's more mass market. And so I really work with teams that have some of the basics, some of the foundations. They've got closers, they've got lead gen down, they've got their marketing down, and they need to know how and when to pull certain levers on the sales team so that they can double, they can triple, they can quadruple the results in principle overnight. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And we're definitely going to dive deeper into some of those strategies so that people can take away actionable advice that they can immediately begin to implement. But I want to dissect a couple things that you just said there. One in particular is the importance of mentorship. You know, can you dive a little deeper into that? Like, how did you find your first mentor, and how did you find other mentors, and what have you gotten out of working with mentors?
Great question. So I found my mentor by getting into his company. And so I came in at the bottom, just doing customer support, customer service. This was when I was transitioning out of a standard 9-to-5. I found a company that had leaders that I aspired to be like, to learn from, that I really thought, wow, these are really powerful people. They're accomplishing big things. I love the values of the business. I love the offer they had. They were running a service for very successful, high net worth individuals to help them with their professional relationships, so their romantic relationships, their ability to communicate in a high value way. And I just thought, wow, if I can get into that company, I don't know exactly how or when, but I feel like something's going to happen. We'll probably talk a little bit more about that here in a moment, about faith and sometimes not over intellectualizing things, but kind of just going with your gut and following through on things. That's played a big part in my journey. And so I got into the company. I worked my way up from customer support to a sort of a success manager type of role, into a coaching role, into the head coaching role. And then after being there for about 6 to 8 months, one of the founders said, hey, we're letting go of one of our salespeople. You've done a really great job of coaching on the fulfillment. Would you like to come to the front of the business and start actually finding the right people to enroll? And I said, I don't know anything about sales, but will you teach me? And he said, yep, I'll take you under my wing. I'll give you one-on-one mentorship and I'll show you how to do it. Little did I know at the time, that guy happened to be, in my humble opinion, the best closer in the world. Still to this day, I think he's the best closer in the world, better than anybody that you've heard of the big names. And so I was very fortunate to have his mentorship. So initially, I was trading, I'll generate your company revenue in exchange for mentorship. He's still my mentor now, 4 years later. The sort of trade-off has changed a little bit. So now it's equity in my business for mentorship. But over time, it's worked its way up from I'll work for the company, then I used to pay him a monthly retainer, then I used to give him a very small share of my business, and then now we're actually 50-50 partners. And the lesson in that is that when you find the right mentor, you have to commit to mastery. You have to commit to going on a lifelong journey for years and years and years of being aligned with someone that's years or decades ahead of you, that has the things, the lifestyle, the material things, but also the intangible things that you want. And so one of the things that I admire with him, he has a lot of money, but he also has every other part of his life dialed in: his relationships, his health, his sort of vision, and his spirituality side of things. And when you find a mentor that has all of that, you've really struck gold. And so what I do now with my mentor, we're 50-50 partners in a private mastermind for closers. And so we've taken that concept of committing to a journey of mastery and committing to a journey of excellence, and we're now mentoring closers that want to go on that journey as well. So that's the story with that.
No, I love that. And I really want to emphasize the long journey point that you brought there, and that really resonated with me, because I've actually had a similar path. How I found it, you know, I think a lot of people are too short-sighted, mm-hmm. that they don't want to put that time in to finding the right mentor and having to wait for actual results. My mentor is now my business partner on both of my companies. And I started as an unpaid intern at a video marketing.
There we go.
10 years ago, and worked my way up from an unpaid intern to a paid intern to part-time to full-time. 5 years ago, we started a business together. That guy paid for my sales training and social media training all around the country. And we've built now 2 7-figure businesses together. But it was because that I played that long game and really stuck with it and continued to learn. And, you know, this is a whatever podcast. You know, I ate shit for a couple years there, right? You eat the ramen. Yeah. it didn't financially, like, I paved my way. But now I'm at a very, you know, wonderful place because I played that long game there. So I definitely commend you on that. That's amazing.
Let me ask you this. If you'd have just paid for a course all of those years back, as opposed to aligning with a mentor, where do you think you would be now compared to where you are? If you'd have just I'll just go through a 12-week course.
Yeah, nowhere close, because I've gone through courses like that. Courses are great. It depends how much handholding that there is. Mentorship for me was everything, because it really is boots on the ground. Connections made, learning from past failures. Mm. So many practical life experiences that if you just jump into a course, I'm intrinsically motivated, but not everybody is. Mm. And so with courses, depending on how much accountability and handholding there is, you're on your own on a lot of these courses to actually implement and stick with it and stay consistent. But if it's your job and you're learning hands-on, you're growing with it as well. And so complete world changer for me. I've taken great courses as well, but I think it definitely was the hand-holding along the way and staying motivated and celebrating every win along the way as well, no matter how small.
100%.
Yeah. So I want to pivot a little bit to something else that you said at the beginning there, because I'd love to hear your take. I'm very in the AI space, and you kind of alluded to some AI tools out there that are doing some of the jobs within sales. One in particular, I don't know if you've heard of Air AI, that is blowing. I'd love to hear your take on some of these AI tools that are infiltrating the sales space in general.
Specifically, what do you want to ask? Because that's a big rabbit hole.
Yeah. So do you think it helps salespeople? Do you think it hurts salespeople? Do you think sales is going to completely change? Do you think the entire process can be automated using AI tools, setting up a program like Air AI into a CRM, into an automated follow-up sequence when there's really no touch points? Do you think the blunt question here is, do you think salespeople in general will always be necessary, or is that going to completely change?
I think it can replace salespeople, but I don't think it can replace what I call closers. And that's a key distinction, because a salesperson in principle is an order taker, and an AI can take orders. Hey, where are you at? Where do you want to go? Brilliant. Here's our 3 different price options. Which one would you like? Yeah, an AI can do that, pretty straightforward. But a closer is someone that is almost a mentor to the prospect that's on the phone, a guide, a Sherpa, almost a coach, sometimes even almost a therapist. And can an AI get there? Maybe one day, but I think we're 5 years away from an AI being able to reframe someone's mental models, be able to reframe someone's limiting beliefs and rip out people's mind viruses. And also, how developed does an AI need to be able to move someone from where they've been stuck by emotional connection? I've had people on the phone that have been so distraught and so apathetic and so stuck in their, you know, their hole and their tunnel emotionally. And I've just leveled with them and said, hey, are you where you want to be? Where do you want to get to? And I'm almost transferring my energy to them, my care, my consideration, my empathy, but doing it in a way that I'm being an advocate for them and almost, without going too far, almost a savior. Can an AI do that? I'm not sure yet. I think maybe one day. And then we get into the conversation about, is an AI going to have feelings? Is it going to be a sentient being, or is it going to be a robot? Well, if we get to a place where an AI literally has feelings, sure. But I think the difference between a salesperson and a closer is a salesperson is tactical and skilled, but it's not necessarily the same as a closer, which is someone that can use energy, enthusiasm, influence, real spiritual and intangible sort of ways of doing things. And I really differentiate very heavily when I communicate or I train on a podcast. A salesperson and a closer are not the same thing. A salesperson can just follow a script, ask a bunch of questions, categorize people into three buckets, you know, yeah, buyer, non-buyer, follow-up. It's like, yeah, an AI can do that. And I was training my mastermind students on this literally last night. If you take the average lead flow and you say 100 leads, 25% of those leads probably never going to buy, or they're not going to buy right now. They're just not ready. 25% of them are probably lay down sales. Like, you don't even have to say anything and they're just ready to go. They've watched the marketing. They've watched the VSL. They've watched the organic content. They're ready to rock and roll. And then you've got this huge chunk, 50% of your business's potential opportunity cost in revenue and potential impact in helping the people that your business is set up to serve. Those are the people that need an advocate. They need someone that can side with them on the same side of the table and sometimes shake them up, get them out of their, you know, dormant sleep of just apathetic mediocrity and middle of the road and settling for where they're at. I don't think an AI can do that until it can get to a place where it can actually communicate non-verbally with a prospect. Does that make sense?
Yeah, a great distinction there between salespeople and closers. And there is that connection that's built that I don't quite know if, yeah, unless AI fully becomes sentient. I totally agree. I was drawn to like the movie Bicentennial Man. You ever?
Yes.
With the late great Robin Williams, and he becomes sentient, and they pass laws for him and whatnot. It was a fascinating movie. And then the other thing that I was just thinking is I just watched a fascinating documentary on HBO last week, Telemarketers. Have you seen that by chance or heard of that?
I have not.
It's wild. It's basically the bottom of the barrel. Salespeople, telemarketers, they follow the script. They have the rebuttals on the wall. My husband's out of town. My car burned down, you know, whatever. And they're just reading that script, hitting the list. And basically it was all scamming. It's a wild series about this company, CDC. They basically would target people on welfare and social security checks. Yeah. And say that they were fundraising on behalf of the police, and they had all these legalities, but just a wild example of, and that's something that I think an AI probably could do, is just hammer that list. Not a good fit, hang up, call again, hammer the list, not a good fit, hang up, boom, and bulk sales numbers. But there absolutely is something to building that rapport with somebody and being like, I'm from the same town as you. Do you remember that little restaurant? And, you know, like building that rapport that's like an intangible thing.
Yep.
To build that trust.
As an example on that, when I train closers on non-scripted objection handling, I tell them that the way you handle an objection or a reframe or a metaphor or a story or an analogy is you make the analogy up on the spot based on something that's true, but that's relatable to the prospect. And I don't know how much data and AI would need to be fed in order to do that. So I'll give an example. Many years back, I was on the phone with a prospect that wanted to get out of being a butcher. So they were a butcher, they were sick and tired of their job, and they wanted to get into cybersecurity, and they wanted to make more money. And at the end of the call, the guy was like, yeah, I honestly just got on the call to kind of just like see what you guys have got going on and, you know, explore some information. And I said, let me ask you this. If someone came into the butcher's and came up to you and said, hey, can I take a look at that hamburger and I want to look at that, you know, spare ribs over there or whatever. They pick up the meat, they sniff it, they fiddle with it and they say, yeah, that's great. I'm not going to buy it. I just wanted to have a look at it. What would you think about that person? And the guy chuckled because he realized how stupid his kind of objection was. But it landed because I connected it to something that he could visualize in his mind. If my client comes into the butcher and does that, it would be absurd. And if I'd have given some verbatim word track, you know, some fancy objection handle about, you know, thinking about it and how that's not the right thing to do, I don't think it would have landed the same. And all of my objection handling training is you got to level with the person on something that makes sense to them, almost comical in a sense. You're almost a wordsmith and a storyteller, which is the difference between a closer and a salesperson. I don't know if an AI could do that yet. Maybe one day. We'll see. But I think we're pretty far away from that.
I agree. And I think that's a great segue into how you actually train sales teams. The first couple of weeks that you work with a company, you approach it from an entirely different headspace and different strategies. And I'd love for you to deep dive into some of those strategies of how you begin to train a sales team to become better closers.
Yeah. So the first principle is to realize that a business is an energetic entity. It's not a machine. A real business, it has a spirit. You walk into certain businesses, you go onto a Zoom call, you go on someone's website, you get a sense, you get a feeling of the spirit of the business. And very often, there's two reasons why a high-ticket offer is leaving a lot of money on the table. Number one, in theory, the easier one is tactical. They're not saying this on the call or their show rate's not as good, and we can pull the levers to make that happen. But the bigger reason, the fundamental reason, is the business has lost its spirit. The sales team aren't fired up. They don't have any goals. They don't know where they're going. They're not working on their personal life. They're just going through the motions. And tying it back to the AI conversation, when you as a closer are on the phone with someone that is crying out for your help and you're just going through the motions, whether consciously or unconsciously, the prospect senses that. They can feel it. And one of the most common responses I get from closers once I've taken them through initial training is they say, I don't know why, but all of my prospects seem to just be turning up to the call now ready to buy. And I'm like, yeah, because you're now showing up to your life in a more powerful way, in a more aligned way, in a more developed way. You've got your flair back. You've got your spirit back. People gravitate to that. They are attracted to that magnetically. People turn up to a business that's like just dead inside and they come up with all of these rationalizations and excuses and abdicating the responsibility to, well, I need to check my wife wants me to do this and whatever. And that's a very spiritual thing. And so when I take the business through a sort of sales training, if you want to call it that, because it's very rarely much about sales, I'm relighting the spirit of the business. I'll take the closers through internal mastery. I'll take them through values. I'll take them through goal setting. I'll take them through habits and rituals and having all of those things aligned in their personal life. If you've ever heard the saying, you don't have business problems, you have personal problems that are manifesting in your business. That as a principle is the biggest thing I see with sales teams. And people now come to me knowing that that's what I know and what I do. And they've now connected the dots. I had a guy recently that just came on as a client and he came to me a few weeks ago and said, the spirit of my team is gone. Like they're technically doing everything right. Like they're saying the right things at the right time, in the right way. Our sales process is dialed in, but there's just something intangible that's missing. I need you to come in and I need you to give them leadership, like mentorship and coaching that's beyond the strategy or the script or the words or whatever. So it's much more of a transformation from the ground up, as opposed to a bolt-on service. Oh, well, I'll just add this SOP in there, or I'll add in this, you know, strategy in here. It's really from the ground up, looking at where the roots of the business have run dry and they're not getting nourished anymore. Is that clear?
Yeah, I love that. And it's so different from other sales methodology and sales training that I've personally taken and have heard before, because a lot of sales training is just, you know, like it's number of calls, and then you get the ratio of percentage, and then you can scale the number of calls and increase your ratio percentage and all of this stuff. But it doesn't get to the fundamental root of what, you know, what you're selling and how you come across on those calls as yes. Well, I love that that approach so much. And I think that's why you've been so successful as well, as it's different from yes. All those sales strategies. Now, kind of taking some of that and applying it to video, and even short form video more specifically, just a short question here, but is it possible to do high ticket sales with short form video?
Do you mean selling it from the video without a sales team? Is that what you're asking?
Generating leads from short form content and then being able to sell.
100%. 100%. And it, just to make sure I understand the question, is the question like, does it matter selling a high ticket service from a 2-hour long YouTube video versus a 15 second clip? Does that make a difference? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, exactly. Because I think there's so many businesses out there that have maybe tried social media. They've tried TikTok. It's not even a trend anymore. TikTok's been around for like 5 years at this point. Short form video has been around for several years at this point. It's still fairly in its infancy. But they don't know necessarily how to create content that resonates with their audience, that actually turns into leads and then closes, right? And so it starts with attention. It starts with awareness of the content that you're creating to generate interest and intrigue and buzz and build that trust and rapport with people so that they actually contact you. And so, like, I've had a lot of instances of how I create content. I actually sell people before they actually get on the call with me. That's a huge mindset shift for me. I am not an outbound salesperson. I am not the person that can make 100 phone calls a day, 200 phone calls a day, send a million LinkedIn in-mail messages, send cold email, and then get rejected, rejected, rejected. So I had to build an inbound strategy of creating content, knowing the emotional needs and desires of the businesses that I'm trying to target, and providing incredible value for them, so that by the time that they've already contacted me, I've basically already sold them, and all I need to do is close them and convince them that they made the right decision to schedule that call in the first place. But for me, it started with 60 second or less videos. And it's very different from an hour long webinar where, you know, the perfect funnel from like ClickFunnels or something, right? It's value, 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 and then value stack the offer at the end, and, you know, slash prices and conversion on that. What's been your experience and what have you seen particular to short form content strategies?
I think you nailed it when you said inbound versus outbound, but I'm going to make a twist on that.
Sure.
Outbound is like, I'm here and I'm going to put myself onto you for an hour long or 2 hour long webinar on YouTube and try and drown you in value and drown you in, you know, content, so that now you're persuaded and you're influenced. Inbound is like, I'm just going to show up knowing that I'm the best option for you. I'm going to put myself out there with some little short form clips so that you know I'm there. And that's like, you're attracting people, as opposed to you're going outbound trying to like drown and consume people and convince them. And if you've ever been in a room where before someone opens their mouth and you don't know anything about them, you feel them and you sense, shit, that guy is somebody or that gal is somebody, you can get a sense of that within 2 seconds. You don't need to have a 2 hour long conversation with them. And so I think it's less about whether it's short form or long form. And like you said, it's more about, do you know how to actually attract? And it's about attraction. Just because you've spent 2 hours talking to the video camera doesn't mean you're doing any attracting. In fact, you could just be completely boring. And so I think the reason that people go for long form over short form is they think, well, I'm not so confident or competent with attracting, so I'll compensate by filming for 2 hours. It's like, well, you're trying to swap apples and pears. Like, you can't compensate for the fact that you're not that magnetic and you're not that attractive, not physically, but as in what your energy. You can't compensate for that by just doing more. And that's when we get into like the territory of like, what creates a successful brand or a successful business? Is it like you said, oh, well, they do 10 times more outbound than this business, or they have, you know, a 200 person team as opposed to a 20. And it's like, no, it's not volume. It's not grind. It's not hard work. It's doing the right things in the right way strategically. And one of those big things, like you said, is having a personality and having charisma and being able to actually attract people without necessarily having to do 3 hour long or 4 hour long webinars. Now, if someone has mastered short form and they can grab someone's attention within 2.2 seconds, and that same person now figures out how to create a 2 hour long webinar or whatever, then that will go very well. But I think people are always looking for the shortcut and the easy option, which is, well, I'll just sit in front of the camera for 2 hours because that's probably easier than me going on the internal journey to become someone that's more attractive and charismatic and magnetic. So that's what I've always found.
Yeah, I love that. And what are some more specific things that you think people get wrong when it comes to the content that they're creating in order to generate leads and sales? And then followed up on that is, what are some tactics and strategies that somebody could use to be more charismatic on camera? What is it, a body language thing? Is it how you specifically talk, words that you use, prep work beforehand? Go with that wherever you'd like.
I'll start with the second question. And I heard this from Jordan Peterson, who does a lot of speaking from stage. And he says, when I'm going to speak from stage, I don't know where my speech is going to go. I haven't scripted it out. I'm just going to have a dialogue with the audience. And he says that in order to do that, he has to know about 10 times more about the subject, his subject knowledge and his breadth of knowledge, than he's actually going to talk about. So what he says is, if I know I'm going to do a 2 hour speech, and I'm just going to free flow, I need to have about 20 hours worth of content that I could talk about so that I can then just let it meander wherever it's going to go. And so when I see content creators that are really bad, and ironically also salespeople on calls that are really bad, they're very rigid. They're like, this is my narrative. This is my script. I've got to say it exactly the way. I've got to follow the teleprompter. And again, it's like what I was saying about cutting corners. Like, if you're truly an expert, you know, we haven't scripted out this podcast. If you're truly an expert, you can just turn the camera on and start talking. And it's like, you've got such a plethora of value and intel and sort of proprietary experience of what you've been through in your field. You don't need to sound robotic. And I see so many bad content creators, they're following the, what are they called? The frameworks, like, you know, the attention, interest, desire, action. And that you can see their script following the framework, but it just feels weird. You're like, all right, they've done the attention, then the interest, then the desire. Like, you can watch the framework happening in front of you, but you're like, I don't feel like I'm connecting with them. And so I think learning to drop the script, and I teach salespeople or closers to not use a script. I think that's the same with content. You know, you see some of the best content. It was in the past, it was Tai Lopez with his iPhone. He'd just hit record and he'd just talk for an hour and he didn't script it. He just made the whole thing up as he went along. And you now see all of this long form that then gets put into short form YouTube podcast content, it's not scripted. It's just 2, 3, 4, 5 really cool people sat in front of a microphone talking about something that they have a massive depth of knowledge. And because their depth is much deeper than they actually need to have for the show, it feels real. It feels authentic. And I'm sure you've seen this with content. I think the biggest thing that you're off to a non-starter with is if you're not authentic. If you're trying to read your 20 headlines for your short form content, and you're doing the thing where you do a talking head and you sit in front of the camera and you're like, right, today's content day, and you sit there and you go through all of your content things. It's like, look at Gary Vaynerchuk. It was just, hey, follow me around with a camera and I'll just talk about what I'm doing. One of the biggest foundations of content creation, like, Daily V, it was just real. It was raw. It was uncut. There was no scripting to it. But again, what we were saying before, if you haven't really gone on the journey inside to become a master and become an expert, to be mentored, to go commit to the long-term journey, and someone follows you around with a camera, you're going to find that your content's not that great, because the only beneficial things that you say are your highlight reels. But when someone's truly a master, it's almost like every word that comes out of their mouth is a quote. And you're like, shit, like every sentence that comes out is like a bumper sticker. And you look at someone like Gary Vee, and he would just be going around the office, going here, going there. And you're like, almost everything he says is like bumper sticker worthy. So that's my thought on the content stuff.
Yeah, I love that. And I totally agree. I'm a huge Gary Vee fan. I've learned a lot from him, seen him speak. And it almost is like, you see him do quick Q&A with fans that come up, and it almost like surprises him what comes out of his mouth. When he gets rolling a little bit, he's gives fire, and then he's like, yeah. And then it like turns into a viral moment, and then his team turns it into a graphic and the whole nine yards there. And 100% agree with that. I'd love to get your advice on a tangible funnel from creating content charismatically to generating the lead to closing. Start on a short form platform. Maybe it's TikTok, maybe it's Instagram.
So I'm not the marketing guy anymore, and I never really went that deep down that rabbit hole in online marketing. But having scaled sales teams, I've had a pulse on some of the marketing. I think one of the biggest things that you need to do with the content creation is it needs to be a story. And so you see a lot of this talking head stuff, and it's like, the 7 reasons that XYZ, or, why XYZ happened. And it's just like cookie cutter headline templates. Whereas the best content always starts with, hey, I was here and I was in this emotional state, and then this happened. And then boom, 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 like the story starts going, and it's like literally a story of the hero's journey. If you've seen Dan Harmon's story wheel, or you've seen Joseph Campbell's story wheel, it's an internal journey and it's an external journey that are both happening at the same time in a story arc. So content-wise, in order to get the best prospects that are ready to buy, you have to get personal. You have to share a story. And I see all of these online funnels. I was reviewing one yesterday for someone that wanted me to come in and fix their sales team. And I watched the VSL and I was like, you haven't shared anything about you. Like, I don't know who you are. I don't connect with you. I don't know your story. You're just telling me about your product and service and your offer, but I don't feel anything. I haven't been moved emotionally. So that's that bit. Now, once you've got the lead, it's really important to get as much upfront data as you can on the lead before it turns into a sales call. Because when you're scaling a sales team, you can burn out the closers quite quickly if you just put every lead on their calendar. And so the easiest way to do that is to have an application form. So once someone's watched content or a VSL and they feel like they're bought into the story and they're like, yes, I'm in exactly the place that, business owner or founder was in, and I want to get to the place that they arrive to, the destination, they're bought into that story, you're almost like that their excitement to work with you is going in this direction. And then you're almost putting up a wall and being like, well, there's an application form. Fill out these questions because we don't just work with everybody. And you're almost taking the lead on a psychological journey before they get on the phone call. And that starts to create a relationship before they get on the phone. So you ask questions, you know, what's the biggest challenges that you've had with this? You know, why is now the time that you really want to fix this? What's the biggest outcome or the biggest goal that you're looking for by getting this? And on a little segue, the reason why a lot of high ticket offer owners don't do that is because if they put an application form in the middle, their lead flow tanks, it goes down so much. And the reason for that is because they haven't actually got a great marketing story on the front end. They don't have great content. They don't have a great story. They don't have great VSL. And so they're just getting volume, thinking that that's all that matters. But you can have 100 leads that just booked in a phone call because they're like, yeah, whatever, I'll book in a phone call. But you're better to have 10 or 15 raving fans that are like, oh my God, I absolutely resonated with your story. I want you to be the guy or the gal that's going to help me fix this problem. And just like you said, before they've even turned up to the sales call, they're almost bought in. And what that allows you to do as a business owner, if done ethically, is the final hurdle that you then need to get over on the sales call is the price. Because if you've done a really good job on the front end and you've been selective in the application form and you do have a good offer, a good service, you can charge big ticket, like really high ticket. And so all the salesperson is now doing is building up enough clarity with the person there and then on the phone that they're sick and tired of staying in their current situation and they're committed to making a change. And then you drop a price on them that's like, all right, it's 15 grand. And they're like, oh, well, that's a lot of money. But yeah, I really wanted to work with this person. I buy into the story. I've had a good conversation with this closer. I need to make a change. Let's do it. And that's another reason why a lot of high ticket offers don't scale is because they don't have the story on the front end. They don't have the application in the middle and the selectivity. And then the only thing that they're able to do is charge 5 grand or 6 grand or 7 grand. They can't go above that number because they haven't done enough on the front end. And it's like the adage that I think it was Conor McGregor said it, but someone said to Conor McGregor, when you're coming up to a fight, are you still training in the gymnasium coming up to the fight? And Conor McGregor replied and said, if I still need to be training coming up to the fight, it's too late. Like, I'm not in the boxing gym sparring the week before my fight. Like, what's an extra week going to do? He said, I'm sat in bed, resting, recovering, chilling out, mentally preparing. And it's like, you can't expect the closers to charge 10, 15, 20K for a high ticket offer when on the front end of the business owner hasn't done enough with the storytelling and the content creation. So,
very well said. Josh, outside of sales and seeing transformation in people, what are you passionate about? What makes you tick?
If I'm being completely honest, I've really focused all my life on everything that supplements that because, and I talk to closers about this a lot as well, is like, I don't believe that you can significantly move your life forward in 2 or 3 or 4 categories all at the same time. You can't say, well, I'm on a make money season. I want to 5X my income, but I also want to do a bodybuilding show. It's like, well, how can you do both of those at the same time? Or like, I really want to be on a spiritual journey, but at the same time, I want to go out and do a lot of dating. It's like, well, if you want to go in that direction, you have to go in that direction. And so when I talk to closers, I say like, if, and it can be fine to say you're not in that season. If you're in a make money season, your relationships, your health, your sort of spiritual journey or your adventures around the world, they should just be on maintenance mode. Like you're just maintaining those things and all of your forward drive is just on make money. And so for me, I really don't do anything except wake up and think, how can I become a better vessel of transformation for the people that I'm going to be working with? Whether that's reading, whether that's seeing new cultures around the world, because it gives me insights or it gives me new ideas or it allows me to think creatively. The food I eat is to fuel my body and to fuel my brain so that I can be an inspiration and you know, lead by example. I literally just do everything to try and think, how can I make the most of the opportunity for me every hour of every day to become a better transformative sort of person for people to connect with? So everything's around that. So I read a lot. I like to see new places. I like to get out of my comfort zone and go travel somewhere different every 3 or 6 months. I spend a lot of time doing masterminds and doing different sort of networking opportunities. So I'm learning and I'm meeting new people. But for not to sound like one of those boring, like, oh, life's just about business people, I don't view it as business for me. I view it as my calling. I view it as my purpose is like, I'm here to consume the inputs that are going to allow me to distill those lessons down and then impart them on the people that sort of my students, I guess. So yeah, everything revolves around that for me.
I love how dedicated and dialed in you are. And I think that even that, just that last section there is so important, because you'd almost be doing a disservice to not be that focused to help people, because you have so much amazing experience to literally transform and change people's lives. If you weren't dedicated and dialed in and putting it out there to help people, it would be a complete disservice to yourself. Yeah. And to the people that you can help.
So 100%. 100%.
Tell us more about Lions Closing and what you offer and who you help.
I help anybody that has the opportunity to increase cash flow and cash collected and revenue. Now, that can be directly with the business owner, or that can be with the individual closers. So for a business owner, I have a program where I come in and I multiply the sales. So very, very different to a sales manager, which I think is an important distinction, because a manager is someone that can take the current direction and hold it steady. But they're not someone that can exponentially increase the output. They don't have the fingertip feel, as it was called by Napoleon, where he would like put his finger up and be able to sense the direction that the enemy is coming from. Like, they don't have that sort of finger on the pulse of like, all right, I've looked at your business, I have a sense, and I just know that this is the next thing that you need to work on. And so I'll come into a business and I have a program of like 12 different things that are potentially the biggest money leaks for a high ticket offer or service. And based on the diagnosis that I've done, I'll work my way through those in a different order for different businesses based on what's going to make the biggest lift as quick as possible. That can be things like rewriting the script. It can be things like coming in and giving leadership to the sales team. It can be things like changing the pricing structure. Sometimes businesses are literally leaving money on the table because their pricing of their service is upside down. So that's for B2B. If a high ticket offer or service is at about $400K to $500K a month in cash consistently, so their lead flow isn't a problem, I can come in, can double, can triple that business in a matter of months. So 60 days, 90 days, so long as their lead flow is down and they know that their sales team could be producing and performing at a significantly higher level, then I'll come in and I'll work with that list of the things that are in my system, the same system that I took Jim Launch through for Mosey's sales team, and I'll work my way through those to scale the offer. So that's number one. And then the second one is, if someone is a closer and they want to become what's called a unicorn closer, so literally one of the outliers, I have a private mastermind. It's definitely not for everybody. You know, on day one, we let them know this is the bar and this is average, this is mediocrity. Like, there is a level of excellence that we demand because you're here to be the best. And so I have a private mastermind. We have live training. they actually get access to my underground mentor as well, who's completely retired now. He's not online. You won't find him anywhere. He's just in that mastermind. And then we have training modules, which I've taken and distilled the lessons that I learned as a full-time closer and laid it out in a very specific order so that as closers, they can get an exponential increase in the amount of money that they're taking home and their lifestyle. So what's really cool is that both of those things tie together. So if a business owner comes to me and says, I want to increase the output of my sales team, I can go into my mastermind and I can replace closers with closers that I've trained and put them into the offer. If I've got closers in my mastermind that are looking for a new offer, I can swap the two together. And so it creates this ecosystem of excellence, this ecosystem of I've got world-class closers that are dedicated to the long-term journey of mastery. And then I've handpicked the businesses that have a home for those closers that are on a long-term path to mastery, where I know the lead flow is fine. I know the business owner has the right mindset and the right foundations, and I can now recommend any of my closers in the mastermind on this new offer. So those are the two things I do. I have a website, lionsclosing.com. So if someone wants to watch the video there, if they're a business owner, they can go there. And then on Instagram, it's joshlyons.sales, where I have a lot of my content more for closers.
And we'll certainly have all of the links in the show notes of this episode. Josh, this was value packed. I feel like I should pay you just for having you. This is awesome.
Too kind.
I appreciate you. Any final words of wisdom that you'd like to bestow upon the listeners and myself that we haven't covered yet?
I think if you're a business owner or if you're a closer, I think one of the most important things that I learned is that how we choose to show up in life is how our prospects are going to show up. So if you're a business owner and you're complaining that your leads aren't good or your closers aren't producing what you want, and then when it comes to you as a business owner making strategic decisions and strategic shifts in your business, and you hesitate, you're fearful, you overthink things, you will find that you attract that same standard or lack of standard and that same behavior. Just the same as if you're a closer. Like I literally turn people away from my mastermind when they come to me and they say, I'm not making the money I want to make. My leads are turning up to the call and they're not buying. They're saying I need to think about it, whatever. And I say, okay, great. What do you want to do about that? And they say, I want to fix it. How do I get training from you? How do I join your mastermind? I say, here's a link. Details are on the page. Checkout page is there. 24 hours later, nothing happens. And I say, do you think part of the problem in regards to why your prospects are showing up that way is because that's the way that you're inviting them to show up and you're literally performing for them that's appropriate? And so I think if I were to leave any bumper sticker of my own, it's to remember that how you choose to show up in your life is how the other people in your life are going to show up. If you want people to show up decisive, powerful, committed, enthusiastic, you've got to be that person yourself.
Love that. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Business Talk. If you feel like you're ready to get started on TikTok, I have a completely free TikTok checklist that you can find in the show notes and description of this episode. If you found this episode inspiring, consider leaving us a 5-star review on iTunes or your favorite podcast listening platform. I know that's a lot to ask of you, but it really does help the podcast reach more people. Do you have any feedback about the show or a guest you'd like to recommend? Email me at podcast@socialtypro.com. Until next time.